Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. This weekend marks the 30th anniversary of the annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair, an event held each June in the Portage County community of Custer. It's held during the summer solstice every year. The Energy Fair brings thousands of people together to learn about sustainability and clean energy, featuring more than 200 workshops and exhibits, farm and garden tours, yoga, an artisan market, live music, food, and a whole lot of fun. Joining me today for the first part of the show is Nick Hyla. Nick is the executive director of the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, organizers of the Energy Fair. He'll give an overview of this year's fair, telling us what's new, what to expect when you attend, and which workshops are creating the biggest buzz. Later in the program, solar project manager Nick Mathis will join us. He'll talk about a partnership with Central and Northern Wisconsin Technical Colleges that would expand the solar workforce in our communities. Nick Hyla, welcome to Route 51. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll take calls and questions from listeners as well. You can join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Nick, I'm so glad to hear from you. Take us back to the beginning. This is a longstanding event. This is the 30th anniversary of the Energy Fair. How did it all get started?
Yeah, so 30 years ago, if your listeners will recall, we had just entered into the first Gulf War. And there was a call to action in a widely read publication at the time called Home Power. It was widely read by anybody that didn't have access to the electrical grid and needed power, so kind of offshore oil and cabins and just remote areas, or anybody interested in developing their own local sources of power. And the call to action was to organize local engagement and education initiatives around domestic energy production and to really engage the public in a conversation about how can we as a nation develop our own power and break this cycle of endless war for oil. And so a local group here in central Wisconsin met in a farm kitchen. Most good things, it turns out, happens in a kitchen.
That's for sure.
and they organized the first event, and to everyone's surprise, around 3,700 people showed up for that first event.
Wow. And
so we've been doing it ever since, and we're expecting about 15,000 attendees this weekend.
Oh, that's incredible. So when I think about events like this one where, you know, so many people are drawn together and, around a specific kind of cause or educational opportunity, I always think about larger cities, maybe Madison, maybe Milwaukee, but this is in Custer. So how did Central Wisconsin, why Custer? Why is this such a great place for this event?
Yeah, that's a good question, I think. And I don't know that chicken or egg story. You know, the folks around here, they're just so welcoming and down to earth. And, you know, there is something to be said about the tightly knit kind of rural community and the welcoming atmosphere that we have. And so I think it's just been cultivated over time. You know, what I came here to the Energy Fair but almost 20 years ago now as a volunteer, and I've met some of the best people I've ever met in my life here. They're just honest, hardworking, mission-driven, very practical people. And, you know, I think one thing that really is a common element in all of the organizers of the fair is, you know, our mission is demonstration, education and demonstration. And some of the first fairs were putting, you know, the tagline was kind of putting the doable in renewable. And it's really about practical, real-world solutions, stuff that's accessible to everybody. So it's not really the pie-in-the-sky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is a big part of rural Wisconsin and rural America is actually doing things and getting things done. And so it really is just a bunch of people getting things done, and I'm just honored to continue to be part of it.
Well, I would imagine that the fair has evolved and changed quite a bit over the years. Would you say that's a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. I was It's our 30th anniversary, so we've been looking back, and at the first energy fair, there was an exhibitor selling solar electric systems, and the pricing at that time was a little over 40 times more expensive than now.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
If you can imagine the economics back then compared to now. Now what you see is that renewable energy, solar and wind, are competing for the cheapest sources of electricity on the utility grid. If you look at all the even large-scale utility new electric generation projects proposed, 80+% of those are solar and wind. And renewable energy is accessible to all types of people, homeowners, business owners, the municipalities, universities, schools, hospitals, fire stations, for the long-term economic benefit of locking in energy prices and diversifying investments. And so we've really seen kind of this mainstreaming of renewable energy. And people come to the event not only to meet back with old friends and network, but it's a big business opportunity. People come here to talk to solar installers and talk to folks that do energy efficient construction, energy efficiency, because they know that it's in our long-term personal financial best interest to do so, and there's a greater social and environmental interest as well.
Well, that's interesting because, of course, we live in an area where we have so many rural communities here in central and northern Wisconsin. So just noting that this is accessible to everyone, I think, is an important point for this fair.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting issues that will be discussed quite a bit today, or I should say starting tomorrow through Sunday, is if you think about domestic energy production with solar and wind, there's a land use component there. And in Wisconsin, we are, whether your listeners know it or not, they probably do because they're WPR listeners, we're in the midst of a farm crisis. We're losing about 500 dairy farms a year, and this trade war and kind of this unsustainable commodity export market for farming has really hurt a lot of farmers. The federal government we're back to the kind of government cheese era of large subsidies just to keep farms afloat. And when we look at our domestic energy consumption in Wisconsin, what you realize is we're spending billions of dollars a year on out-of-state fossil fuel. We have no domestic sources of energy except for solar and wind. And so we'll be talking a lot about kind of the opportunity for land use. We do, as an organization, the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, we engage jurisdictions all over Midwest, but this year particularly in Wisconsin, around planning and zoning for solar development. And it is really a tremendous opportunity, if planned correctly, to increase land values, to increase local tax base for jurisdictions, and to create power that's sustainable and creates local jobs. So we'll be talking a lot about that this weekend. And a lot of that is rural.
Sure. And I was actually looking between the farm and garden tours. There's cooking demos. There's an extended fermented foods workshop. A lot of focus on food at this year's Energy Fair. And that sustainable farm and garden tour, it looks like this gives an opportunity to really learn about growing and purchasing sustainable organic food. I guess maybe you can speak to the impact that that has on the local economy.
Yeah, so we are, the event writ large is not only about clean energy, but also sustainability. And, those are in the Venn diagram, we're kind of in the middle. And people have really reinvigorated their interest in real food and local food. And we've just seen that as a tremendous growth opportunity. And so we have really focused on that. We have chefs from all over here and farms and workshops for anybody who's interested in not only growing their own food, but engaging in small-scale diversified farming or just generally connecting with farmers to get real food. And obviously, you know, that's of tremendous economic interest to Wisconsin. We have a long agricultural tradition, and when you engage in the local food economy, you know, you're purchasing directly from someone locally, and all that food stays locally. And you know, it's just actually just better. It's better for your palate more than anything.
Okay. I know that you've got regular workshops and then you've got extended workshops. Can you tell us how those workshops differ from the regular workshops?
Yeah, so if someone is interested in coming to the fair this week, this weekend, they will have access to over 250 workshops and 250 exhibits, and it's $15 a day. However, if you volunteer for 2 hours, you get in free, so it's accessible to everyone. And then if you want to come for the whole weekend, which many people do, that's $35. And so throughout the weekend, most of the workshops are 1 hour long. So, you know, if you're thinking of, you know, for example, sustainable farm and garden, and you come on Friday, you'll be able to participate, for example, in sustainable gardening workshops and beekeeping workshops and fermenting food workshops. And however, if you look at, if you're interested in a deep dive, there's some really great extended workshops. One's on sustainable coffee harvesting, another one's on sustainable farming, and then we have a whole series throughout the weekend of special solar professional workshops. So for those that are active in the industry, you know, we're a large industry network. MREA is a member-based organization. We have over 2,100 members, and more than 600 of those are business members that work in the solar and energy efficiency industry throughout the Midwest. So we provide them with professional training throughout the weekend. And so people who are interested in learning more about solar, those workshops also happen, and those include, you know, solar and battery storage, microgrids, you know, all the latest technologies and basics, efficient installation practices, et cetera.
Sure. I see there are plenty of workshops that are directed toward kids, too.
Yeah, so we are a family event. Interestingly, our two biggest audiences of recent are folks that are looking to purchase, you know, so they are building a house, or they just bought some land, or they're retiring and they want to make some investments that are good for them and the planet. And so so we just, you know, there's a lot of that smart consumer shopping. And then there is our next audience is young families. So people with children that are just really engaged in this kind of sustainability movement and really interested in, you know, the careers that are out there and the networks that are out there. And so we host kids activities all weekend, and there are plays, and there's aerial dancing, and there's the Raptor Education Group is going to be here. So they'll have
that looks so cool.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Turtle snakes, and that's all put on actually by a local charter school. And so they, it's really educational, and my kids absolutely love it. They'll be here all weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just taking a look at the list, I can see many, many things for kids. So it's I guess it's a way to bring the whole family together. So we do need to take a break, but we'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Nikaila today on Route 51, previewing the upcoming Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer. When we return, we'll talk about technology and the impact of policy changes on clean energy. And we want to hear from you, too. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Nikaila is our guest today as we preview the annual Midwest Renewable Energy Fair planned for this weekend in Custer. We'd love to hear from you, too. The number to call if you'd like to join the conversation is 800-780-9742. So, Nick, I know that clean energy has – the technology behind it anyway has really changed over the years. Has that changed the energy fair itself?
Yeah, it has. You know, we started off at, you know, obviously as kind of an activist group, and now it's, we call ourselves a big tent organization. You know, the fair takes place in this giant tent city on our 60-acre campus here in central Wisconsin. And what's happened is, you know, as more and more groups have become interested in the possibilities and the actualities of renewable energy, we just see all types of people here. We've expanded much beyond kind of that original, activist and more kind of environmentally minded, and are much more engaging consumers in all types of activities. For example, one area that's really growing now is this idea of electrification. And, you know, electricity is really the highest form of usable energy we have. It's transferable. It has the ability to be clean and local with solar and wind. And so one of those electrification avenues is vehicles. And we've seen kind of with Tesla and Chevy and Nissan and now every major automaker, the kind of main streaming of high performance and high range electric vehicles. So we'll have pretty much every make and model on display here over the weekend, so over 100 electric vehicles, and we have a solar car charging station, so we'll have, I think, 16 different electric vehicle chargers on campus, including a DC fast charger, so we'll be charging vehicles all weekend, mm-hmm. And so we see, you know, the technology rapidly advancing, and as I mentioned, you know, accessible to all audiences, and so yes, it's definitely changed, and we are we are definitely a different organization in some ways than we were 30 years ago.
I'm taking a look at your website, by the way. It's theenergyfair.org that has all the information about this weekend's fair. But I see that the Clean Transportation Show, you mentioned the vehicles. I see some of them actually run on moonshine?
Yes. Yeah, you know, some of
wow.
the first, if you think about, for example, Edison, and one of his first patents was an electric vehicle, and one of the first vehicles that came to market was an alcohol vehicle. So electric vehicles and alcohol-based vehicles were pretty much the standard first automobiles until, you know, the access to cheap petroleum from foreign countries. And we're finally kind of coming all the way back around where we see the battery storage technology and the electric motor technology really now leapfrogging the gas combustion technology. And we still have exhibitors that are, they've been here for decades and they're still making their own fuel at home.
Wow. That's pretty cool. That is, I didn't think about how cars were, automobiles were initially fueled, but I guess that does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk a little bit about schools? I know some Wisconsin schools are going solar. You've got a workshop on this coming up on Friday about a foundation providing public schools in Wisconsin this opportunity to install the PV systems over the next 3 years. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, this is a new program, Solar on Schools. We're super excited about it. We're partnered with a new foundation in Wisconsin called the Couliard Solar Foundation, and they have a vision of helping 100 schools go solar in Wisconsin over the next 3 years. They've already helped 3 schools, and so we're just at the beginning. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense. You know, if you look at school budgets, you know, deferred maintenance and their energy bills, the ability to install a solar electric system, and we with the support from the foundation, we're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings over the life of the system for the school district, and trust me when I tell you they have uses for that money.
Yes, I would imagine so.
And for us, you know, the only limitation right now that we see in the market is really this kind of like social cultural adoption. And, you know, the economics are there, the technologies are there, and we as a society, we just need to make the commitment to do it and make it a priority. And so in engaging in the public school system and, you know, public schools all across Wisconsin are really some of our last convening places where we all mix together all races, religions, political beliefs. And we're really excited to kind of showcase the potentials and possibilities and positive outcomes of adopting solar, and so we'll be focused on public schools here over the next couple of years. And like I said, we're hoping to help at least 100 schools invest in local solar energy.
It feels like 10 years ago that would have never happened. I mean, that schools wouldn't have looked to this route. Do you feel like attitudes about clean energy are evolving, changing?
Well, you know, the clean energy is the future. Electricity is the future, and if we want a future that has local jobs and that saves the state money and that's good for the economy and the environment, then it needs to be domestic and clean. And you know, the difference now between 10 years ago is that the folks that were doing it 10 years ago, the economics wasn't their first priority. You know, they had greater priorities than that, and that was the audience at that time. And now, folks where the economics are the priority, they're choosing solar, and they're choosing wind, and they're choosing energy efficiency. And you know, the only thing that separates someone now that does or does not choose clean energy is education. When people realize the benefits and the kind of the standardization of the technology, you know, no moving parts, widely adopted by all market sectors, like America's number one choice for new electricity generation, you know, it's hard to say no. And so that makes our mission of education and demonstration really valuable right now, because we are at this inflection point where we're going to turn the corner, and we feel like we're on the right side of history here, that the future is clean electricity.
What about energy policies? I mean, what specific energy policies have changed that have an impact on us here in central and northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, the most contemporary, I can tell you, is it's really interesting. You know, in Wisconsin, we have the vast majority of electricity that's sold is sold by monopoly investor-owned utilities. So these are for-profit companies that have some state sponsorship and that are regulated by appointed officials, you know, politically appointed officials. And that's an interesting context. We have we don't have an attorney general's office, for example, that protects the residential ratepayer here. We have a small nonprofit called the Citizens Utility Board. We were one of the first states in the nation, I think actually the first state in the nation, to establish a Citizens Utility Board to represent residential ratepayers, and they're celebrating their 40th year this year. We're actually giving them an award. We're planting a tree in their honor. And the reason I bring them up is that, you know, their real focus has always been to make sure that there's no cost shifting of the costs of electricity onto this underrepresented community of residential ratepayers. You can imagine at the Capitol, you know, who's more represented, the utility investors, the large industrial customers, or like all of our small homes? You know, mm-hmm. we are underrepresented, so the Citizens Utility Board does that for us. And starting a few years ago, what ended up happening in their real approach, you know, this is a very detailed approach that they take to analyze the impact of these types of investments. Because, you know, when an investor-owned utility makes an investment in natural gas plant or in transmission or whatever they're investing in, those costs are paid for by future ratepayers, right? We are paying back their initial capital investment plus interest. And so the Citizens Utility Board is just very interested in making sure that those investments are good for us. And we already have some of the highest electric rates in the central United States in Wisconsin. And the utilities are shutting down some past investments in coal plants and nuclear plants, and we're still paying for those. And so, interestingly now, the environmental community that's been pushing for renewables and the Citizens Utility Board that's been pushing for the best possible investment outcomes are all want the same thing. They want local distributed generation because it makes the most sense for our economics, for future ratepayers, and it's just the right decision. And that is a relatively new thing, and it's kind of really disrupting the traditional energy market. Utilities now are very interested in renewable energy, both large scale, and they have new programs to do so on the customer side of the meter. And so, you know, we're really interested to see how this market grows, because now everybody, the utilities that had traditionally invested in large fossil fuel, are now also interested in renewables. So It's going to be a competition, and you're going to see. We're also surrounded by states. Wisconsin is surrounded by states that whose solar markets are growing 10 plus times faster than ours. So Minnesota and Illinois and Iowa.
Okay.
Enabling state policy.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So we're going to see a period of catch up here, regardless of what state policymakers may or may not want. You know, the ship has sailed here, and we're going to see a solar revolution in Wisconsin.
Interesting. I do want to remind our listeners, you can call in with your questions. Nick Hyla, Executive Director of MREA, is our guest right now. 800-780-9742 is the number to call. Circling back to that school program we were just talking about, it occurred to me, I wonder, does this initiative have like room to expand to other schools? Could it be a model for other communities in the future?
Yeah, one of the challenges right now with schools or, say, municipalities or any nonprofit organization is that for solar energy, there's a 30% federal tax credit for taxpaying entities. So if you have what they call a tax appetite, you know, you pay taxes. Say you're a household and you owe $10,000 in taxes, but you bought a $10,000 solar PV system, solar electric system, you'll get a $3,000 tax credit, so then your tax bill will be $7,000. That really helps the economics of solar. It's one way that the federal tax system provides an incentive for people to invest in clean energy. And obviously, if you're not a taxpaying entity, then you don't get that credit, right?
Right.
The other limitation is that the utilities, investor-owned utilities in Wisconsin, are really pushing back against how people finance their solar energy investments. So across the country, there's a very popular financing mechanism. It's called power purchase agreements, where a tax-paying entity will buy the solar electric system and get the tax credit and enter into an agreement with a school where the school pays them. This is power purchase agreement, usually at a cost less than the electricity rate, so the school saves money right away. And so in lieu of paying the utility, they pay the solar electric system financer, and then that allows them to get solar with little to no upfront cost, save money right away, and eventually own the system after 10 years or 15 years. And so right now in Wisconsin, the utilities are really pushing back against that type of financing. And so we have a little bit of work to do to make this more accessible to schools, and that's kind of the real focus of the work with the Foundation of the Solar on Schools program, is to really engage schools in a way that make this attractive to them to do. And our position always is, you know, we're not here to sell solar energy. We're here to help you understand the benefits. And if the benefits are right for you, it's your decision to go forward. 90% of all the solar electricity that's bought and sold in the United States is really still done by referral. Happy customers make more happy customers. And so we're really focused on engaging this market to make sure that it works. And you know, we'll engage likely with our partners in the policy environment to make sure that we can open up this competitive market and make it accessible to everybody.
It's interesting. There are so many workshops and presentations on the schedule. And again, you can see those at theenergyfair.org. The schedule is listed by time, and you can easily see which of those are meant for children. Plenty of those available as well. One thing that I noticed, the Energy Fair is offering free water testing all weekend long. What's that about?
Yeah, so we have a partnership. We have a local water testing lab, and people in central Wisconsin all over the state are really interested in their water quality. You know, we have very high nitrates in certain areas of the state, and even bacterial coliform problems. And this is a big issue in central Wisconsin, and that's actually one of our most popular booths is
really?
The free water testing.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the lines at the front gate of people holding their water bottles of water to come
sure.
get it tested. And so we also, you know, beyond that, we also have a partnership with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. They come in and they do they'll do a workshop and cooking demonstration on hunting and fishing for dinner, and they'll talk about hunting. We have a partnership with the Aldo Leopold Foundation and a whole series of workshops from them about conservation, land management, And so there's really there's a real interest right now in kind of this land management, environmental quality, and so we see that as very popular aspects of the Energy Fair.
You know, you mentioned the hunting for dinner. I know that you also have some. Well, you have a bunch of cooking demonstrations, really, but the around the farm table looks interesting too.
There's a community that we when you think about it, I had mentioned before, just kind of jokingly that most good things happen in the kitchen. But you know, some of these conversations around food are really kind of bring us back together. You know, it's probably no surprise to you and your listeners that we live in kind of polarizing times, and we see food as kind of like, at least when I was growing up, you know, my parents made us sit down for dinner every night, and that's when we talked and reconnected. And so this type of conversation is like sitting around the farm table is really a place to like. It's really a place to be human again, and find our humanist nature, and realize that we share more in common than we're separate. And so I'm excited about that conversation.
Well, good. I think that I think it's true that so many of our important conversations and our connectivity as families and as social groups really do happen in the kitchen. That's certainly true at our house, I know.
But, good for you. Yeah. Keep that up. We try to do that at our house also.
Yeah. One other thing that caught my eye, I just have to bring it up. A few years ago, I was at a music festival in Detroit Lakes, Michigan, the 10,000 Lakes Music Festival. And they had,
oh, yeah, great festival.
Oh, yeah. We went to the last one, and now they don't have it anymore. But it was fantastic. And one of the things that they had were these cups that were all made out of corn. I mean, the cups, you didn't have these plastic cups that were adding tons to the landfill. And I see that you've got a zero waste effort at your energy fair as well.
Yeah, we have to, you know, you have to walk the walk. And so we even require all of our food vendors to use compostable plates, and we do all our own on-site composting. And so all the glasses and plates and utensils are compostable. Actually, you know, in doing that, it's really interesting. And in committing ourselves to this, we've really run into some really interesting stuff. For example, we have our plates that you'll see, and you'll see a vendor here that uses these compressed palm frond plates. They're like these
really
gorgeous compostable plates that are just made from palm leaves.
Okay.
And so we have that and bagasse stuff and corn, and yeah, it's really interesting. And so we really try hard to do that. You know what? A little bit of a tangent, but I consider myself, you know, a conservationist and an environmentalist and pretty environmentally minded. And I've just been really scratching my head about why there's so many plastics in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is our recycling programs. You know, we don't really have a good enough focus on recycling, and we send a lot of dirty recycling on boats overseas, and they don't want it, and so the boats turn around to dump it in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot of unintended consequences of us not being particular about how we use waste, and us not wanting, for example, local landfills or to deal with our own waste. And so we really focus on that at the fair and try to walk the walk. So yeah, we're composting all the time.
All right. We need to take a break in just a moment, but very quickly, we do have a caller from Athens who wanted to know what is the status of state and federal incentives with solar, aside from tax credit. Tony from Athens had called, and I wanted you to quickly address that before we go to a break.
Well, hi, Tony. Thanks for calling in. Unfortunately, we can't hear your voice right now. So when it comes to state programs, we're a bit at a standstill. You know, there are some great proposals there, but the majorities in both the Assembly and the Senate are kind of really they're resisting any major push. You know, the new administration, they have renewable energy as a real target and goal. So, for example, one of the proposals that's out there that has widespread Democratic support right now is a renewable energy development authority that kind of uses the Wisconsin Economic Development Authority's kind of framework to really stimulate financing in renewables and fund pilot projects. And so there's some really innovative ideas there, obviously making third-party financing legal. And so we're hopeful, but at this time we're a bit at a standstill, and there's a lot of erosion that's happening in kind of this like anti-renewables political block, and we're seeing some real growing interest, but there's the logjam isn't broken yet. So, so I would encourage all of your listeners is if you have a representative that is dragging their feet on clean energy policy to give them a call and let them know that it's time to get out of the dark ages.
All right. Executive Director Nick Hyla from the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. I appreciate you being here. I know you're going to pass the baton to another Nick who's playing a key role in this year's Energy Fair, Solar Project Manager Nick Mathis. He's involved in multiple events this weekend. You can join the conversation too, 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Joining us now is Solar Project Manager Nick Mathis. He's involved in multiple events at this year's Midwest Renewable Energy Fair. Of course, we'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Nick, welcome to Route 51. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you've worked in a variety of capacities throughout the years. You've done multi-megawatt systems across the Midwest, small off-grid systems for remote communities, tribal communities. What do you see as the future of the solar workforce in central and northern Wisconsin? That's my first question for you.
Well, I think the future is bright for the workforce. As Nick mentioned, there's been a lot of solar development in the surrounding states, and Wisconsin is still playing catch-up, but what one thing that Wisconsin has been steady. We've had steady growth, and we continue to see that upward trend. And so there's a lot of work, for anybody that would like to get their hands on the systems. It's pretty nice. The one thing about the solar industry that's somewhat unique is a really good entry point for anyone that wants to get into it. You can work with your hands on, you can work more in the office type of situations. It's it's a pretty broad field, a lot of good opportunities.
I see that that solar installer is the fastest growing job in 8 U.S. states. I thought that was an interesting statistic. More than 3,000 of those jobs are in Wisconsin, and still there's a need to satisfy those job openings. So I know that you're working in a partnership to expand the solar workforce. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're working with in a partnership with four different technical colleges throughout the state. We've got Mid-State Tech College in central Wisconsin here, Madison College, Northeastern Wisconsin Tech College up in Green Bay, and then Chippewa Valley Tech College up in Eau Claire. So we kind of spread across, hit most areas of the state. And so we're working with the colleges to get their students in renewable program, the students that they have in renewable programs, get them trained and roll that into paid internships with local contractors.
Okay.
So the nice thing about dealing with the different tech colleges spread across the state is we're able to integrate them with contractors in their area. And so we're kind of facilitating that, getting them placed, and then working with the tech colleges to develop more advanced curriculum and turn it into a really good learning experience and something that helps the contractors get employees and helps the students that want to work with solar, help them find a contractor to work with.
Sure, and it sounds like you have buy-in from some great local colleges and really are working to move that forward.
Absolutely.
So I know that you were involved in the disaster relief effort in Puerto Rico. And I see a special event on Saturday at the Energy Fair called Solar Experiences from Puerto Rico. Are you involved in that event?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm really curious how solar energy played a role in Puerto Rico. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in March 2019, we partnered with the City of Madison and Northwind Renewable Energy Cooperative and went down to the municipality of Toa Baja, which is just outside of San Juan, Puerto Rico. And we installed a 24-module system on the Calendaria Community Center.
Okay.
It was an 8.4-kilowatt system, but it's 24 solar modules, or solar panels, as you'll call them. And so we did that for their on their community centers. SLAC can operate as their temporary disaster relief shelter, and it contains emergency supplies. The thing about their community center is that it's high enough where it was stayed safe from the flooding that damaged the area significantly following the hurricane. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to partner with the Couliard Solar Foundation and, like I mentioned, City of Madison Northwind Renewable Energy Cooperative to get materials donated and funds donated to get us down there, install the system so it can start offsetting their electrical consumption now. And then we're working on fundraising to integrate battery storage so that it can operate completely self-sufficiently in the fact of another disaster.
Okay, well, so that is happening on Saturday at 4:30. This solar experience is from Puerto Rico, so people can hear a lot more about that effort. I have to tell you, I think many people might not think of central and northern Wisconsin as solar friendly. I mean, we just don't live in a hot climate or an area where we see sunshine nearly every day of the year. There are a lot of workshops on solar energy. In actuality, I mean, how well does solar energy work here?
Well, that's a great question. We get that a lot, actually.
I bet.
Solar works wonderfully in Wisconsin. You know, obviously down in the desert southwest, they get more sunlight than we do, and so they have more available sun hours per day. But we still have a significant solar resource in Wisconsin, even with the clouds or anything like that. And if you look at Germany, who's been leading the world in solar development for years on end, they have about the same solar resource as Alaska does.
Okay.
And so it's just a matter of scale. You know, if we want to produce as much energy as they do in Arizona, we'll just put up a little more solar. But it's scalable, and it works out just great in Wisconsin.
So for people in central and northern Wisconsin, even newbies like me who don't know anything about it, there's hope for me.
Oh, absolutely. And as Nick had spoke to before, I mean, the Energy Fair is a great stepping point for anybody that's interested in solar, because there's all sorts of different workshops that will give you a better idea of what goes into solar, what you can get out of it, but then also a lot of contractors that you can talk to that they can give you a good idea of what the cost you're looking at is.
That's interesting. A couple of new home developments here in Wausau have included solar panels and solar energy. And I think it's interesting to see more of that as new buildings go up. I mean, what do you see specifically in central Wisconsin? Much more interest than before, or about the same?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, much more interest. I mean, there's always been a steady base of interest in renewables in central Wisconsin in our area here. But as it gets deployed more and people see it up more and they understand the economics of the systems, it becomes a lot more demystified and more accessible. And so as more people learn about it and learn that it's actually really economically affordable and makes good money sense as far as investments are concerned, you see it just keeps growing and growing.
I know that that you're going to be participating in this special event on the Puerto Rico experience, but what else are you involved in for this year's Energy Fair?
Well, we're going to be talking about a couple different training programs that we have. We've got the, Nick had mentioned the Solar on Schools. We'll be talking about that on Friday. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about our Solar Ready Wisconsin initiative that we're working with the different tech colleges and municipalities throughout the state. We're going to be brainstorming and doing some work together there. On Sunday, I'm going to be presenting with Nick on the Wisconsin Solar Corps, which is the broader training initiative that we're pushing across the state. Because, you know, I mentioned our four tech colleges that we're working with, but
yes,
we really are trying to push beyond that. We get as many people into the solar industry as, you know, as would like to be.
The Solar Corps. So explain what that is exactly.
Well, it's going to be, we're going to operate as a hub of people trying to get into the industry or people looking for employees.
Uh-huh.
And do this to get a really well-trained workforce.
Sure.
Then we're going to keep rolling that into doing more installations for municipalities and high impact, high visibility installations for nonprofit organizations and more community-minded things.
Okay. You know, I was reading your bio on the Midwest Renewable Energy Association website. I see you've participated in just a bunch of trainings over the years. So what do you think people who attend this year's Energy Fair, particularly people interested in turning sunlight into energy, what do you think they come away with?
Well, I think there's a few things you come away with. One is really how accessible it is. There's something for just about everyone in the solar industry, as I like to think about it. And then two, you're going to walk away with a lot of good leads. If you want to work doing installations, you're going to be able to talk with a lot of contractors face-to-face and, walk away with job prospects. If you're looking at doing more training or furthering your education, you get a better idea of what's out there, training schedules and, things of that nature.
So really, I mean, it's pretty multifaceted. So you can learn how to perhaps think about installing solar for your home or your business, but there might be some job-related information as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Interesting. So, and let's go back to that the jobs involved, because that's so important to our economy in central and northern Wisconsin. So if solar installer is the fastest growing job, but you said that there are other related jobs associated with that, right?
Absolutely. When you're doing, it's not just installation work. There's a lot. Once it's the trickle down effect, as the installations grow and there's more work for installers, there's more work for people that are doing sales, people that are doing support. And then it's the whole community effect, because as your development goes, then your wholesale houses, your electrical supply houses, everybody, it's economic benefit that spreads out.
Sure. It trickles down, I would imagine. Yes,
indeed.
So, is there a specific session that you're really excited about at this year's Energy Fair? There's so many to choose from.
I mean, I think on the solar side of things, there's a couple really neat professional or more advanced level trainings on battery technologies. Batteries are a big issue in solar these days, because there's just so much more development, and year after year, innovations just keep blowing the earlier technologies out of the water. But so there's a lot of good information on the different battery technologies. And then personally, myself also, I'm really interested in the partnership we've made with the Aldo Leopold Center Fund and then the Wisconsin DNR. And there's a couple really neat workshops on managing your woodlands and things like that.
I was just looking. The solar greenhouse is one that's going to be presented. I have a black thumb. I can never grow anything. my husband will attest to that. But I'm seeing that there's a workshop on maximizing solar heat gain from a greenhouse through some specific storage techniques. I thought that was interesting as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So and there's build a solar cooker. You can actually use sun rays to heat up some food. That to me is amazing.
Yeah, and that's one of our long-standing workshops, and they've got their solar cookers on display. You can see how to build them, and you can see, they actually offer them for purchase also at a really neat little heated boxes.
So I don't have to build my own?
No, you don't have to build your own.
Because in addition to having a black thumb, I'm also not very handy with a with a hammer. So,
they sell the prepackaged units that are really sharp. They'll fold up into a nice tidy little box, and you can unfold the reflectors, and you can cook food incredibly efficiently with them. But yeah, so you can, if you wanted to just purchase, that's great. Or if you wanted to learn how to build your own, again, something for everyone.
Yeah, it sure seems like it. So there's not only the workshops, but also the keynote speakers, the extended workshops. There's plenty of wonderful music throughout the weekend, and lots of events for kids as well. I want to tell listeners that they can find out everything they need to know about the Energy Fair this weekend at theenergyfair.org. has information about the events and how to get there. There's some shuttle buses as well. So I want to thank you. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seaworth. I'd like to thank our guests, Midwest Renewable Energy Executive Director Nick Hyla and Solar Project Manager Nick Mathis. Our executive producer today is Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer is Joy Ratchkramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we're hosting a discussion on the magic of vinyl records and why small record stores in our area continue to thrive despite the surge in digital downloads. Until then, we're heading out of town.